guy.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
Thanks for listening to Project Schoolyard Volume 2. For more information about the project, as well as lyric to the songs on this CD, please visit www.tightrope.cc. You can also find jokes, news articles, a photo gallery, free CD downloads, and a secure online shopping cart. We carry a full line of flags, t-shirts, CDs, books, stickers, and other products of interest to racially conscious white people. Please visit www.tightrope.cc.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
You're listening to Resolution Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
All right, everybody, happy Saturday night. I am exhausted. Long day. First, let's get started with the typical pleasantries. First of all, I want to welcome all of you to the AFN official podcast. Thank you for coming. I'm going to talk about some things that I want to go over. When I get done, I'll open up the floor to anybody that wants to chime in. All you'll have to do is raise your hand. We'll get you unmuted. You can chime in. It's very important that we conduct ourselves with honor and integrity, like good examples of white men and women. So if you do choose to speak at the end, we just ask that you keep cursing to a minimum, represent yourselves well. Also, please always remember AFN operates 100% within the confines of the law. So any comments that would be contrary to that, we'll have to get you muted and out of here. So let's just keep that in mind. Now, let's get to the topic at hand, man. I had a long day. Only got in the door about 2 hours ago. I got a whole mess of kids, which I'm very happy about. But when you do, it's always good to do one-on-one time with them. And so I took one of my kids out for quite the day today. It was a long day. Just got back, but I wanted to go over some things. And last week, I know we were talking about representation mattering, and I mentioned about, you know, positions of government briefly. And I like to think that when we have these conversations here on Saturday nights, that we build upon previous topics. So I know that I've talked before, I think it was even the first stream maybe that I did for AFM, talking about, you know, the black pill and how dangerous it can be, and that, you know, no political solution, if repeated enough, becomes a black pill all on its own. I mean, there's truth and merit to that phrase, but I think that taking it too far can also be a negative. And shortly after the stream last week, I was speaking with a friend of mine who was telling me that he had conversation with somebody. He got in an argument with somebody on Telegram that was questioning, you know, what do you actually do for the white race? And he got all up in arms about it. And he's like, well, you know, I'm gonna run and I'm going to get involved in my local government. And, you know, I say this not to mock him. I think that's an amazing idea. But it was what happened next that really inspired me to talk about this tonight, which is I was telling him about a situation of my own. I'm getting ready to move quite a distance from where I'm currently at. But I have to make trips down there from time to time to do work. And I have, you know, surveillance cameras installed because I can't be there to defend everything at all times. And I got to leave tools and materials and such. And about 2 months ago, we had an issue where there were people trespassing on the property. They were walking all around. They were looking, taking pictures, probably thought it was vacant or something. But I contacted the sheriff in that neighborhood because it's, you know, one of the areas that runs with a sheriff instead of police or whatever. And they didn't answer. First of all, that pissed me off. So I left a message to this day, and this was 2 months ago. I haven't gotten a call back, and I let them know that I had, you know, video footage of who was trespassing that I could provide and everything. Never, ever got a call back. Meanwhile, I was just there recently. And, you know, suffice it to say, we're like an hour from the closest grocery store at this property. So anything you want to do is quite a drive. Well, I go on a trip to get some materials away I haven't gone before. And within 20 minutes of leaving my property, I pass three of the deputy vehicles for this area. Meanwhile, there's only three deputies in the whole county. So it's pretty obvious that it wasn't an issue of where we're located being too remote. Nobody ever just helped us for whatever reason. And so I went off on a tangent. I was like, man, I'm gonna run for sheriff in my local area. And he was like, well, you can't run for sheriff. You have to have law enforcement experience. And I'm like, no, man, the sheriff is an elected position. He's like, oh, well, yeah, but you gotta have law enforcement. I'm like, no, you really don't. And he didn't understand that. He's like, well, you know, but I want to get involved in local government. But then I started looking into it because I wasn't 100% sure I was right. And so what I'll say now is after doing my research, I think I could be right about that. I'm certain that it's very possible that certain communities, counties, townships, states, what have you, may have specific election rules or laws or ordinances or whatever it's called. I'm not a politician. And so maybe it does require a history in law enforcement, but I was unable to find a specific example of that being the case. So even if it is a requirement, it's not a very regular requirement from what I've seen. I can say that with all honesty. So you don't even need law enforcement experience to be a sheriff. And he didn't know that. And it made me realize that, you know, I know some things like that, but I really didn't understand what it takes to run for government. And so I started doing some research, and I've been involved in different political things before. So I know that you have requirements about, you know, sometimes you have to get different signatures to be on a ballot if you're not of a major party. And, you know, this varies from state to state. Election laws can get complicated. But the thing I wanted to share tonight is how anyone can really get involved in your local government, that involvement can have significant impact, at least on a community level, and that can be the building blocks for the future. And again, you know, as we've talked about intellectual honesty before, this is not necessarily the right path for everybody. I mean, not everybody's going to make a good politician or bureaucrat, just like not all of us could be militiamen and not all of us could be radio men. You know, we all have our skills, and we have to lean into that to be the most effective member of our community and race that we can be and a benefit to one another. So you have to use some intellectual honesty. Everybody wants to be the next Hitler, right? But not everybody is equipped to be the next Hitler. So it's really important that you approach it with that. But that all being said, I did some research, and there were a couple points I wanted to talk about. So first of all, I want to talk about some of the main positions that you can get involved in local government. And these are not all the positions. There's many, but I'm going to talk about five of the main ones, sheriff being one of them. since it's germane to my interest. But then also I want to talk about some things I discovered in doing this research that shows just how easy it is to get involved, and not just get involved, but to get elected. And then furthermore, I'll wrap it up with, I had an interesting thought that I wanted to ask that I didn't know how to Google. So I hate it, but I did go to ChatGPT and ask it a question. And the answer, I think, was pretty much what I was looking for. And I think it's fairly accurate. And you'll see what I mean. It doesn't hammer down to any ideological certainty. But the way I posed the question, I think it's valuable. So let's start off talking about the positions in local government. So the first one we're going to talk about is a mayor. I think a lot of us are really familiar with the mayor is. It's basically the president of a town or a city, right? And in a small town, you might never know who the mayor is. In a big city like New York, you'll always know who it is. It's friggin' Eric Adams, and what a wonderful job he's doing. But it depends on population whether or not you're really going to make a name for yourself, but it doesn't change based on population what the mayor actually does, what they're responsible for, and what they can impact. So they are basically the main executive officer for a city or town. They're elected through a general election, and all the eligible voters in the city or town are eligible to vote. So it's not a restrictive election at all. It's done very similarly to how you would vote for the president. And depending on the local government structure, it's either done directly by the voters or by city council members standing in kind of as an electoral college, for lack of a better phrase, for the voters. But mayors typically do have significant power in that executive position, and they have power to shape policies in a community. So they have that executive authority, as I said, and they oversee things like the implementation and enforcement of local laws and policies. Now, as the executive, they're not writing that. We're going to get to other branches of local government that actually write the policies and ordinances and laws for your area. But they do have executive authority over the enforcement of them. Perfect example is when we look at some of these Democrat cities, and mayors have determined, okay, we're not, you know, we can't pass a decriminalization of this drug law. But what I can do is I can order my police department to, not arrest people for that anymore. And we see what's happened across the country with those kinds of initiatives. But that is a power that a mayor has. And so while we're talking about it negatively here, you have to consider that the right person in that office could do an equal amount of good with actions like that in the opposite direction. They also have a central role in the budgeting process for whatever municipality they're in charge of. They get to propose the budget, and then they work with the city council, who approves the budget, and they work with them to allocate the money to different programs and services. So from a community impact standpoint, if you're in a small local community of white folks or like-minded individuals, and you're able to be in a role such as this, you can really shape where the money's going, okay? Is it an area with a large elderly population? Do you need different amenities for that demographic? Are there a lot of new and young families? Do you need to put money into initiatives for after-school programs and parks and things like that for the children? These are all things that a mayor is very well positioned to have a huge impact on. They also usually are in charge of other positions. Just like a president appoints a cabinet, a mayor often has the authority to appoint key administrative positions and department heads. And that allows the mayor, depending on who they put in those positions, to fill a whole bunch of positions with like-minded individuals that can have the same impact. And that helps them shape the direction and the priorities of your local government. So I think that's really important. And then again, through their policy making and their oversight, they do a lot of stuff with physical and economic development of cities, like, you know, changing road names is one that comes to mind, but that's very inconsequential. But all kinds of initiatives related to infrastructure, housing, economic growth policies, small business policies, a mayor can do a lot of good in that regard. And again, as I kind of touched on before, depending on the structure of your area, you know, some places have sheriffs, which is going to be in charge of your law enforcement division. But in other cities or small areas, you may have the mayor in charge of the local police department as the executive official, kind of like the way the president is, you know, the commander in chief of the armed services. Very similar concept on a much smaller scale. So you might have that power as a mayor. So between all of these different powers that a mayor has, I don't think that I really need to emphasize that it's pretty much in a small area setting until you start looking, you know, statewide or major citywide, it's going to be the most impact that an individual could have. Now, moving on to some of the smaller roles, and we're going to come back to why I'm discussing all of these and where you can get involved. And I think it's different for everybody, but let me go over the positions first. So then you have the city council, and the city council members are also elected, and they represent different districts or the city at large. So depending on the area, you could have a city council for the whole city, or if it's a little bit larger, broken down into parishes, what have you, depending where you live, they could have a different city council member for each of those areas. Now, the city council is responsible for creating the local laws and ordinances. So that's the body that can say bars need to not be open on a Sunday, or businesses on Main Street should not be open on a Sunday. These are things we used to refer to as blue laws when I was a kid. So those are laws. Those are actual laws and ordinances that a city council member has the ability to make. And I want you to just pause for a second and think about that. What I'm telling you is that this small body government office is completely within your grasp. If you're not happy with what's going on in your community, you literally have the ability to become one of the people that changes the rules of how that community lives. This is not for everybody, as I said before, and with it comes a lot of responsibility and power. But it is something to consider. A lot of people don't realize how attainable this actually is. So beyond that, they approve the city budget, which we touched on before, after the mayor proposes it. And they make decisions on local issues like zoning, public services, trash pickup, community development, things of that nature. And they are typically elected by the residents of whatever city or town they represent. They're typically right on the ballot. In small elections, and we'll talk about voter turnout for small elections here in a little bit because it's pathetic. And again, that can involve district-based or, you know, voter-by-voter voting, where the candidates either represent specific districts or the city as a whole, and it goes back really to the size of the city. And then you have the county commissioners. County commissioners oversee the administration of the city government. So, you know, is everything working properly? Is everybody doing their job? They're kind of like the oversight for that. And they play a very critical role in making decisions relating to the different services like public health, public works, and law enforcement, making sure the budgets are being followed after approved, etc. And the commissioners also manage that budget and represent the constituents in larger regional matters. They're also elected through a general election by the eligible voters. And when we talk about eligible voters for these positions, remember, these are going to be people who specifically live in that area. So this could be a city of hundreds of thousands. It could be a township of 12,000, which is a very small number of people. So that's important to remember. Now, before we get into sheriff, and this is one I think that we all need to consider, is the school board. People don't realize a lot of times the school board is elected officials. These are the people that are setting policy and enforcing policy for the school districts. If you haven't been living under a rock for the last 5 years, these school boards are the same organizations that have been pushing some of this perverse ideology on our children and this perverse material on our children. These are the same bodies that our government claims was a misunderstood memo about parents being labeled potentially as domestic, you know, terror friends, because I don't want to use the word, for standing up at these school board meetings to perversion. These school boards are elected positions. You could be on that board. If you have children, it's certainly something that you should consider. If you have the bandwidth to get involved in your community, the school board is a really important place to think of doing it. This, we've seen what happens when the wrong people are in those roles. We've got to take back our schools for our children. Our children are everything. They're our entire future. We cannot allow this to continue. And, you know, what do? They make decisions on the policies, like I said, the budgets, the curriculum, like actually what teachers are supposed to be teaching. And that includes things like critical race theory. And they often work very closely with the superintendent to make sure that the schools run smoothly. And their decisions directly impact the education and the well-being of your community's children. They're elected by a ballot. You can run for school board. You can be elected to the school board. This is very important. And then finally, the last position that I want to go over a little bit before we get into the other details is the sheriff, like I said before. So the sheriff is elected in a general election, and they're responsible for the entirety if you have a sheriff. Now, this varies. I've seen places where the sheriff's office is little more than a department that serves warrants or, you know, constabulary notices. I've also seen cases where the sheriff is the chief police officer in an entire area. The deputies are the squad, and that's that. You don't have state police coming into your territory. You don't have city police coming into your territory. And in cases like those, sheriffs are of a much more significant thing. We see this, you know, when we saw, what was it, Sheriff Joe Arpaio, was that in Arizona, New Mexico? I'm not too familiar with him, but we see it with Grady Judd down in Florida. These are sheriffs that wield considerable power, and they're the lead law enforcement person for their area. So they oversee the county law enforcement agency, they manage the county jail, and they serve as the chief police officer. They're the chief of police. They, too, are elected through a general election process. And, yeah, now we're going to go back to what I said before anybody thinks I'm ignorant. I'm being a smartass about wanting to replace the sheriff in this area. I have no law enforcement experience. I would not consider myself to be a militia-capable individual. I'm more than capable of, providing for and defending my family, but I know my strengths. This is about intellectual honesty. I shouldn't be a sheriff, okay? That being said, while, you know, if you're running against an opponent, they're going to call into question, do you have law enforcement experience? Do you have military experience? Do you have any type of legal understanding that would qualify you for the role? Those are questions people are going to ask, and they're certainly the answers to those questions are going to be used in determining whether or not you get their vote. That being said, it's not a requirement. It is very possible for anyone listening here who is intelligent and capable enough and has a good understanding of what's required in the role to run for sheriff and get elected to be sheriff. So that's another thing to consider. Sheriffs wield very significant influence in their community. They have a great deal of power, and they determine what crimes are being addressed. If there's high crime areas, are they focusing on it? They have a lot of responsibility to their community, and especially because they are often in charge of the county jail as well. So that's important. Now, here's what I really want to get into, is that I knew that it was a thing, but I didn't have the data. So I did some research, especially in smaller rural areas. And I know we don't all live in small rural areas, but even if we don't, I think a lot of us recognize that forming communities in smaller rural areas is a really good thing for the white nationalist movement right now. And so I think that's why maybe this holds a place for me as being so important. But when we're talking about these low population areas, these rural areas, with low level local government positions, it's very common. And I can't emphasize this enough. It is very common that these people who run for these positions run unopposed, meaning there's no one else running. They do what they have to do, mind you. There's still rules. You need to get whatever signatures you need to be on the ballot. You have to pay filing fees. You have to make sure that you meet deadlines. But if you follow the rules, you could find yourself in a position where you're the only person even trying to get that role. You win the election by default. You're in the role. And this, you know, I'm not saying everybody's just going to walk into a role. I'm not trying to minimize this, but let's talk about some real data because it's important to know. So looking at data from the 2022 general election cycle, because that's the most recent stuff I found, it found that a staggering 67% of small and local government positions that appeared on ballots in 2022 were unopposed or uncontested. So either a new person ran, nobody opposed them, they got in, or you had an incumbent that just won re-election by default. 67%. Further, those numbers indicate that the issue becomes more significant as you move into local government, with a significant percentage of regional district attorney positions and district and circuit court judge positions going uncontested in 2022. Now, these are positions I didn't touch on. Why? Because to be a district attorney, to be a district or circuit court judge, you're almost certainly going to need a juris doctorate. You're almost certainly going to need to have passed the bar. These are legal positions that go more beyond the fact that they're elected and really lean into the fact that you have a bar association in your state that's going to require these things of you. So that's not going to be for pretty much anybody listening here tonight, unless you're a lawyer and I don't know about it. And if you are, congratulations, run for district attorney in a small town and don't listen to me. A couple other things. So the data also showed that nearly every state in the country in 2022 saw a majority of positions on their ballots go uncontested, and only 5 states having a percentage below 40%. So think about this. Only 5 states in the country had a percentage under 40 of uncontested or unopposed positions, meaning that 45 states had more than 40% of their positions go uncontested or unopposed. This is ridiculous, people. You really think about what that means. And then even high-profile states, okay, so states like Georgia, Arizona, Texas AFM folks, listen to this, Texas and New York saw 70%, 7/10 of their races in 2022 went uncontested. If you got free time to play a video game or play poker or sit at the bar some nights a week, which I'm not trashing, I like to go to a bar and have a beer maybe twice a year because I got too much going on to do it more than that. I'm not talking it down, but if you got time for that and you're living in one of these areas and you care about your people and you have the skills, get involved, man. 7/10 uncontested. That's ridiculous. The only state in the country with a respectable number was New Hampshire, and that was just under 18%, which to me is still too much. That's almost 20%. So there's a really high percentage of local government positions, and that includes the school board, and they often find themselves with uncontested candidates, which means voters get no choice. The community gets no choice, and we're doing it to ourselves by not getting involved. So that's really important. Now, the mayor thing. I wanted to look into specifically how are mayors elected, because I thought when we look at all 5 of these positions, mayor's probably the most desirable one, you would think. People usually want to be the head honcho. So I'm like, all right, well, how many of these uncontested positions are for mayor? And it was hard to find data. I found one article that talked about a report titled Who Runs for Mayor in America, and it was done by the Center for Local Elections in American Politics, and that was at all these friggin' words, Rice University's Kinder Institute for Urban Research. And now There were only 6 states studied, okay? So this is not a full country idea. But I think we can use them. If you listen to the states, they're California, Indiana, Kentucky, Louisiana, Minnesota, and Virginia. And they account for roughly 10% of the country's municipalities. So we're talking about a 10% sample of the country. But when you look, you know, we've got California on the West Coast. We have Virginia on the East Coast, also considered a southern state. You got Louisiana, which is a southern state. You got the Appalachian region represented with Kentucky. You got the Midwest with Indiana and Minnesota. I think this is a pretty good set of states if you're going to do it on a small scale to take for an example. And what they found in these states is that about half of all mayoral elections feature only one candidate. And in small towns, unopposed elections are very prevalent, and that's 79% of elections being uncontested. In just these states, 79% of elections in small towns were uncontested, and 50% of mayor elections specifically were uncontested. That's insanity. Also, the report indicated that this is an increase. Unopposed elections are increasing. And then that was with an average of 60% of mayoral contests in those states containing only one candidate in 2016. So it suggests that small population city mayors running unopposed is a very common thing, and that it's only increasing. So we have a prime opportunity here to start getting involved at the local level. And I think it's really important to think about it. First of all, you've got this epidemic of unopposed elections, meaning you will literally walk into the office. But let's talk about small areas and not try to look for the easiest possible way. I mean, even if you have to run for an office, I mean, think about the anecdote I gave you about that sheriff earlier. I mean, I can't be the only one who's irritated, and I don't even live there full-time yet. He sucked. And people feel that way. And you can get involved in so many smaller ways in your community, right? Like, get involved with the volunteer fire department. You can't be a firefighter. You can't do EMS. Fine. I know every fire department in America runs fundraisers. At least the volunteer ones do. You know, find out what they do, man. Every volunteer fire department I know of at least has 1 or 2 chicken barbecues a year. And then depending on the ethnic majority of your area, I've seen Polack areas go with pierogies and kielbasa. I've seen Irish areas go with, you know, corned beef and cabbage. I've seen Italian majority areas go with spaghetti and meatball dinners. And people show up, they pay their fee, they get the food, they go home. Get involved in that. Raise money for these critical infrastructure aspects of your small area if you can't get involved in politics. And if you want to get involved in politics, or you're new to an area and you don't know the community at large, that's still a great thing to do. First of all, be active in your community. Don't just look for how you can rule them. Be an active member of your community. Do these things and people will get to learn your face, and they'll get to learn you as an individual who cares about the greater good of the people around you, and that will buy you goodwill when those elections come and they're not uncontested. Be a visible part of your community and speak the truth and stand up for what we believe in, and let the people around you know that it's acceptable for them to do the same thing. You can empower your community and fight for your race in ways that you really don't think about in the day-to-day activities of your life. So it's really important. I also wanted to know how common it is for these school board members to run unopposed, because that one, with a bunch of kids, you know, and I'm not even sure if I'm done having them, the school board thing really bothers me. Now, I don't know if I'm ever going to have to deal with it again, because after COVID, I mean, we really got exposed to what's going on with this educational system. And at this point, you know, I don't judge anybody who's not able to homeschool. It's not an easy thing, but it's certainly preferential in my mind, and I think that's the direction we're going to be going from here on out. But, you know, the school still matters for the other children in the community that are not able to be homeschooled, and you certainly don't want your community being raised out to be a bunch of perverts with this ridiculous critical race theory and gender ideology corrupting your future community. So looking at the data, I found a study from Ballotpedia that said that between 2018 and 2021, between 24 and 40% of candidates for school boards ran unopposed. And then there's specific instances which were much higher than that. So, for example, New Jersey had 805 uncontested seats. And then in 2017, in an Iowa race for school board, only 10% of registered voters even voted for school board members. So one in 10 people who's even allowed to vote is casting their ballot on these school board members, and half of them are running uncontested anyway. It's ridiculous. We're allowing the fox into the hen house with this, people. We're allowing our children to be the subject of this gross experimentation of the soul. We've got to stop this. We need to get involved. School board's a great place to do it if you care about that. So it's very easy to get into these positions. And then finally, after talking about all that, here's where we come to the point where I told you, I asked ChatGPT a question. I wanted it to really flesh out for me something that I really knew and understood, but wasn't quite sure how to put into words. So the question I asked it was, and we're talking about normies here, right? But we have to think about it like with the last election, right? A lot of us heard things Trump was saying and went, oh, yeah, that sounds good, but we still saw him for the Zionist guy that he is. But then you had a lot of people on the left rightfully hearing those same things and going, oh, that's a right-wing dog whistle. So it's important to think about the greater community who's not going to accept maybe your hardcore stance on things, but if they're far enough right, then maybe you can get them on your side, even if you don't agree on everything, is really what I'm getting at. And so here's how I word the question. I said, if a right-wing voter perceives a candidate as aligning with their side of the political spectrum, are they more likely to vote for a candidate with ideas they may otherwise find extreme? Okay, so what I'm saying here is, would your average normie vote for a guy like Adolf Hitler if they believed that this guy, despite having his anti-Semitic viewpoints, would restore them from their Weimar conditions? You see what I'm asking here? That's what I'm asking here. And so here's the answer that ChatGPT gives to that question. Political psychology research suggests that voters are more likely to support candidates who align with their ideological beliefs, even if those candidates express ideas that may be perceived as extreme. This phenomenon is known as partisan bias or ideological reinforcement, and it often leads individuals to support candidates from their own political camp, even when the candidate's ideas might be considered extreme or unconventional. Studies have shown that voters tend to exhibit partisan bias, wherein they are more inclined to support candidates and policies associated with their ideological or partisan preferences, regardless of the specific content or extremity of the ideas. Voters often engage in motivated reasoning, a cognitive process in which they interpret information in a way that confirms their pre-existing beliefs and attitudes. This can lead individuals to downplay or rationalize extreme ideas from candidates aligned with their own side of the political spectrum. Group identity and social influence play a significant role in shaping voting behavior. Individuals may feel a sense of identity and belonging within their group, leading them to support candidates who are seen as representing their community, even if the candidate's ideas are perceived as extreme by others. In summary, right-wing voters are more likely to support candidates who align with their side of the political spectrum, even if those candidates express ideas that may be considered extreme. Partisan bias, motivated reasoning, group identity, social influence, and confirmation bias all contribute to this tendency, shaping individual perceptions and voting behavior based on their ideological preferences. So I'm not going to comment on that. Like I said, that's not, I didn't write that. I don't want to mislead anybody. It was definitely a ChatGPT response, but I think it's really illuminating. It shows us a path forward, especially after discussing how easy it is to achieve these local positions that have such a heavy-handed impact on our individual communities. So I hope that anybody who's thought about this, maybe learned something or wanted to get involved, sees now how easy it is, because I think there's a great level of importance in it. Not for everybody, but if you're somebody that, you know, could excel in one of these places, I think that you should. But that being said, I'll stop my talking. I'll open it up. Anybody who wants to talk, go ahead and raise your hand, and if we get nobody, we'll shut her down, but give everybody a chance to talk who wants to.
This is Ron Paul. I am a former congressman, physician, and presidential candidate. The world is in turmoil. Things like Ebola, earthquakes, wars, and famines are commonplace. As Americans, we are largely sheltered from these events. However, in parts of the world, just having enough food is a huge problem. For some of us, there is the nagging thought that we may not always have it so good. So we keep some food on hand just in case. My family and I have found a product that helps us do this better. It's a home freeze dryer from Harvest Right. With it, we eat healthier and store a little more food. We freeze dry everything we love to eat, and it lasts up to 25 years. Who knows what the future will bring? One thing certain, my family and I will always have food on the table. To learn more, go to HarvestRight.com or call 800-763-5999. That's HarvestRight.com or 800-763-5999.
Is there a count somewhere?
You're listening to Resolution Radio.
ResolutionRDO.com.
Do you want to fix America's police and take the country back in the process? If you answered yes, then CSPOA needs you. CSPOA.org, the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, is an organization comprised of citizens, sheriffs, police, and other government officials. We are taking America back sheriff by sheriff, county by county, and state by state. And we need you. Over 300 sheriffs constitutionally trained. We teach public servants the Constitution and need your help. Become a part of the solution today at CSPOA.org.
All right. Well, I'm not going to sit here with the awkward. Oh, we got Bolts. Bolts, I'll get you unmuted here. There you go. You can unmute yourself.
Yeah, I figure I'll jump in here. We always do the Mexican standoff when it comes to talking about these things. I'm actually typing up some AFN info right now, but I like what you said, and you know, I've been thinking about this quite a bit, because you know, there are many of us that feel that all is lost, or that this entire government system is hopeless and will not ever serve our people, and so on and so forth. But I do feel that if we are to forge a way and to have deep roots within a community, we have to get involved within that community. We can't always set ourselves apart or be separate from, because, you know, when the mobs start getting whipped up, they're going to look for somebody to burn. And you know, if nobody knows you and all they know is you're a filthy Nazi, then it's, you know, it's pretty easy to make a person like that a target. I do question, though, you know, membership with AFN, membership with different national socialist groups or white power groups, and really how to overcome that if you've ever been doxxed or to represent who you are, but represent yourself in such a way that it is palatable to your community. And that's something I wrestle with now, and I kind of wrestle with, you know, daily, trying to walk that line between being real about who I am and what I'm about, but also not being so out there that that I'm not walking down the street with a giant Swazi on my shirt, basically, you know. So those are my thoughts.
Yeah, it's definitely a difficult balance, and certainly anybody who's been doxxed or is in a position where they really can't be open about their political ideology or racial ideology, it's certainly going to be a challenge. You know, sometimes it doesn't get noticed, and, you know, I've heard it said before by leadership in different times, you know, people got doxxed and thought it was going to be the end, and then, you know, a couple of days go by and they realize that nobody really cared. But then you have people in other positions, you know, that are involved in public sector or larger corporations, and it does become a problem for their career. So that's definitely concerning. And especially if it's known while you're running for office, it can be a challenge. I definitely see that. But then again, I've also seen people get into office and it's found out only after the fact that they have membership in an organization like this. So, you know, I think it's a case-by-case thing. I certainly think that everybody has to weigh the risk-reward for themselves. But I guess the overarching thing that I'm always trying to hit on is, if this thing isn't for you, something is. And so as long as we're all doing something that has positive value, I think that's the best we can do. But I think this is an area where some people can step in, and I hope that they do. But thanks for sharing. I like that you always have something to say. It's always a value. Thanks, brother.
Yeah, one of the things you touched on was that, you know, you're moving to a very rural area. And one of the things that I've been thinking about, you know, being part of an organization that is nationwide, but relatively diffuse in various locations. You know, we only have a handful of members here and there in certain areas and stuff, and really kind of seeing the need to concentrate our power and concentrate like-minded people and this and that, even after many, trying to get out there and meet like-minded people, but not making a lot of headway. I'd kind of like to know your thoughts on, you know, what you see is the future in a way, because I really think that, you know, if people have the ability to get up and move so that they can be closer or, you know, amongst a larger group or in an area where people have very similar leanings, I think that's a good thing. And I really do think that that is somewhat the future of what we need to do. You know, I mean, there's certain areas in this country, those arcs come to mind, Pacific Northwest, so on and so forth, where it's somewhat well known, you know, that there's a higher concentration of our people. But I'd kind of like to know your thoughts on that, you know, whether it's even worth sticking out in some areas, or if you have the ability to, and your career doesn't dictate that you need to be in a certain area, go ahead and pack it up, you know, get with your friends and forge a destiny together in that area, you know, wherever it may be.
Yeah, you couldn't have asked me a question I have more thoughts on, because I've spent a great deal of the past 4 or 5 years thinking about exactly those questions until we settled on where we were going to be. And I, you know, I did make contact with a lot of people in the movement who are doing exactly that. People in the Pacific Northwest, you know, there's, and I wouldn't personally touch it with a 10-foot pole, but, you know, not to say anything negative about anybody, but the situation up in Maine. You also, again, like you said, the Ozarks, you've got that northwestern Arkansas area, the whole Ozarkia region, as they like to call it. I know that there's a big white nationalist secessionist movement down in Texas as well. So I think that if you have a place that's already populated with these people, or with people that you believe see things the same way you do, and they're building a community already, I don't necessarily think that there's anything wrong with packing up and going to those places, because there's an establishment there already and there's a value in that. But then again, I also don't think that every one of those areas is going to be for everybody. I think that there's other areas that can be strategic, areas where there's a lot of underdeveloped or undeveloped land at a low cost. I think our prime value, especially if they're rich in natural resources. I think that areas that are much more racially homogenous, I'm talking like 95%+ white European Americans. I think that there's ways you can look for areas that are not already established and still find resource value, strategic value, more capability for what you can achieve depending on your means. And especially if you have friends. I mean, you know, I don't know if it's normal or not. I know a lot of people I talk to are having a lot of kids these days, especially in the movement. I think that's wonderful. But, you know, you still see families with 1, 2, 3 kids. But, you know, you got 5, 6 kids, and you got 1 or 2 buddies that are about to have 5, 6 kids, and you go buy 50, 60 acres as a group of a few families somewhere for, you know, pennies on the dollar, and you can establish a community of 20, 30 people right there, or you can move into a predominantly white, low population center, ingratiate yourself. If it's primarily white, I mean, you don't have to go right in there and start, you know, preaching in German and, you know, screaming about the Juden. You know, you can go in there and start saying, man, I love to look around and see nothing but good, upstanding white people. Did you see what that black guy in the city did last week? So I don't think there's one answer for everybody. I think that you have to consider it strategically, but I do think that building community in whatever way that looks successful for you is absolutely the answer. I just don't think there's necessarily only one right way to do it. I guess I got a little long-winded on it, but that's kind of my whole view on it. So, Bolts, I don't know if you were responding. You're on mute. You don't have to respond. I'm just not sure. But if anybody else wants to talk.
I agree with a lot of what you said. And, you know, I mean, just lots of things rattling around in my head. You know, I'm in an industry that, you know, it's global in scope, but kind of localized. So, you know, trying to be strategic about where I go or this or that. It does get a little bit difficult, but, you know, just seeing kind of the future and really trying to establish that level of community and because there's power. I mean, there's power in numbers, and it's I feel like this fight will be won when we have each other's backs and we truly develop our community and develop our culture, and, you know, we have the numbers in a given area to really, really be a force, you know. Gets kind of disheartening, you know, like just a voice on Telegram kind of stuff. I mean, I'm heavily involved, but at the same time, I wish I had a hell of a lot more people around me, put it that way.
Yeah, no, I feel that. I think a lot of us do. You're not alone. Anybody else have anything to add before we wrap it up for tonight? Let me get you unmuted here. All right, you're good to unmute yourself.
Yeah, I just kind of wanted to touch on relocating. I mean, I'm sure it's no secret I'm over here on the left coast. And, man, I really want to get out of here because basically I don't have any more friends. You know, one of my best friends is gone. And I want to be around more like-minded people, and just I was thinking like Texas or Ohio or something, because I feel like I know there's another guy in AFN here now in California. It's no secret where I'm from, which is good, and he's only about 45 minutes away, but man, I feel alone over here, and it would be nice to get around, you know, a huge group of AFN members in whatever state it might be, Texas, Ohio, down in the Ozarks, whatever. But, like, I just wanted to touch on that. Like, Bolts, I feel the same way, man. And then, like, and the industry I'm in is actually nationwide. So, I mean, work's not really the issue. It's just trying to gather up enough shekels to escape this place, you know. But where I'm at, man, I try and talk to people. I'll sit back and I'll kind of study somebody and see, you know, I can kind of study a person and tell if they might be like-minded. And if they are, I'll walk up and give them a card, give them an AFN card, you know, try and strike up a conversation. But it's kind of hard over here where I'm at, because everybody's into smoking weed. A white guy would be into smoking weed and listening to boog music. So listening to that, you know, listening to that bullshit, excuse my language, but yeah, it's really subverted over here, and it's hard to find like-minded white folks. And then if you do, they kind of half step it. They kind of just go the Trump route. And I want to relocate and be around, you know, people who are not half stepping, like maybe Texas. Texas has got a good group. Plus, I don't know. I feel like I'd have a better chance of buying a house over there, because I ain't buying one where I'm at. Only people that can afford houses where I'm at are Indians, fresh off the boat, fresh out of the mud hut with the 800 credit score. And I also wanted to touch on like the fear of being doxxed or whatever, like, and kind of like just race relations with other races. So hang on, buddy. So I'm a mechanic, and I have like two black customers that only want me to work on their vehicles. And these guys are like nothing but respectful to me, and I'm respectful to them. But man, I got a shaved head, tattoos. Like, it's pretty obvious, like, and kind of the way I carry myself at work, you know. But these guys still want me to work on their stuff because I'm a good mechanic. And then, you know, just trying to, I'm trying not to be like, hey, F you, dude. I don't want to touch your stuff. You know what I mean? But they know I'm a good mechanic, so they only want me to touch their stuff, and I don't want to get fired from my job and get doxxed, you know? So race relations over here is hard, especially if you're good at what you do. Then you got everybody coming to you saying, hey, man, can you fix this? Can you fix that? And it's like, it's kind of, you know, you got to kind of tell them no. You know, you can't tell them no, you know what I mean? I don't mess with you, you know. It's kind of hard to do, but you try and be respectful. And but where I work, you got to say, all right, dude, you know, thanks for the compliment. Yeah, I'll work on your, I'll fix your stuff, you know, without screwing yourself and, you know, getting fired. But it's kind of obvious. You could tell by looking at me what I am, you know what I mean? They call me a wood, but I'm not a wood, but you can tell who I am, you know. But you gotta kind of be careful around here in California, because I don't know, I just wanted to touch on that. But
and I appreciate it. You definitely behind enemy lines out there in California, for sure. More power to you. But yeah, I mean, look for an area that you can afford, you know, make a plan and work towards it. It took me a long time. Hell, I'm almost 40, and I'm only just now able to do this kind of thing for my family. So, you know, it's not always easy. It's definitely a struggle, but you got to not let yourself be overcome by the hardships. And, you know, the race relations thing, as you call it, I like that. That's very tactful. But, you know, at the end of the day, you got a family to provide for. You don't like it, it's not ideal. It's not like you're doing it with pride, but sometimes you got to make sacrifices for the greater good, and that's how I would view what you're experiencing there. I just hope that you're able to get yourself out of there and find some mental peace to not have to do that soon enough. But thanks for sharing.
Yeah, I mean, these guys aren't coming to my house. They're at my workplace, and, you know, they like the work I do. I take care of them, and hell, one even brings me whiskey. He's all, you want some weed? I was like, no, I don't mess with that, dude. And he's all, you drink? I'm like, yeah, I drink. So every time he brings his bike in, he brings me some whiskey, and he requests for me to work on his bike, and I take care of him. And you know what I mean? I take that as a compliment, but deep down inside, I honestly don't want to talk to you, and I don't want to work on your stuff. But you know what? I'm going to, you know, you're respectful to me. I'm going to take care of your vehicle. But, you being who you are, you try not to screw yourself in the workplace anyway. I mean, even in my line of work, if they found out, I'd be like, yeah, that's who I am. You want to fire me or not? I'm one of your top earners here. So what do you want to do? I'll go elsewhere.
All right. Anybody else got anything to add before we go? All right. Well, we'll wrap it up. Thank you all for coming by this Saturday. I want to say white power, hail victory. Have a good week, and we'll see you again next time.
You're listening to Resolution Radio.
Radio. Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
Today's story, the latest arrest in Charlottesville Tiki Torch lawfare campaign, is Patriot Front's Thomas Rousseau. Charlottesville, Virginia. Patriot Front leader Thomas Rousseau was arrested over a felony warrant out of Virginia this weekend, making him the latest in a long list of pro-white activists still being prosecuted for events allegedly stemming from the 2017 Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville. Rousseau, the revered nationalist figure known for his cowboy aesthetics and grand drum-led marches throughout the United States, was booked into McLennan County Jail on Friday evening, thanks to an ancient anti-Klan law that prosecutors allege Rousseau broke during the iconic torchlit march. He could face up to 5 years in prison if convicted. In response, his organization has called it a 7-year witch hunt by politically motivated prosecutors. Rousseau's arrest comes after a nearly 7-year witch hunt by politically motivated prosecutors, stemming from the events that transpired at the Unite the Right rally in 2017, read a statement from Patriot Front made to its official Telegram page. Rousseau faces a fabricated felony charge for burning objects with intent to intimidate. This is the burden that American patriots must bear. Patriot Front will continue to organize and work in the nation's cause unimpeded, it continued. While Unite the Right may have ended over 7 years ago, high-profile politicians, prosecutors, and other anti-white extremists have continued to use the event to attack all of its roughly 300 attendees.
Today's story. Patriotic Alternatives Sam Melia was sentenced to 2 years in prison for an anti-white hate conviction. Sam Melia has been sentenced to 2 years in prison, effective immediately, according to Patriotic Alternative head Mark Collett. The sentence comes amid a guilty verdict of inciting racial hatred over truthful and legal stickers last month, and will now result in Melia missing the birth of his second child. Outrage over the harsh sentence can already be witnessed on social media. The White Papers Policy Institute called the move a ridiculous injustice and urged people to donate to a GiveZengo linked to the Melia family. Sam Melia, a husband, father, activist, and dedicated advocate for the native British, has just been sentenced to 2 years in prison because he produced and placed stickers warning about demographic change in Britain, read a post to WPPI's official Telegram page. Telling the truth about demographic change and cultural differences between peoples will now land you in prison. Laura Amelia Towler and her daughter are now without Sam. There is a GiveSendGo to support Sam and Laura. They are a wonderful nationalist couple expecting their second child, all while having to deal with this ridiculous injustice in a world where the state, media, and justice systems are against us at every turn. Nationalists must come together and be a family, a true support network, it continued.
Today's story. Transgender mass shooter Audrey Hale is spared an extremism classification by the ADL. Nashville, Tennessee. The Anti-Defamation League refused to classify transgender mass shooter Audrey Hale as a left-wing extremist because she once penned the word faggots in her manifesto. The decision to exclude Hale from the list came amid a recent ADL report that claimed right-wing extremism was the source of all extremism-related shootings in 2023. Transgender mass shooter Audrey Hale, who murdered six people, including 3 9-year-old children inside a Christian school, did so because of a violent hatred towards white children, according to pages of her now-leaked manifesto. Hale had transitioned into the opposite sex, calling herself Aiden, and penned multiple journals and diaries outlining her hatred of white people. "Kill those kids, those crackers. Going to private fancy schools with those fancy khakis and sports backpacks with their daddy's Mustangs and convertibles. Fuck you little shits," her writing said. Despite her apparent anti-white animus, however, the ADL believes that there was no clear evidence of extremism behind the Hale shooting. Instead, they believe the shooting was born from a perceived class struggle or mental illness. The ADL also appears to use the presence of faggots in her writings as a convenient way to exonerate Hale of a left-wing extremist classification. For more news like this, visit justicereport.news and subscribe to our Telegram, Substack, and Odyssey to keep up to date on all the latest headlines from around the world. Become a paid supporter and gain access to our full archive of audio articles and enjoy the Justice Report on the go.
My brothers, my sisters, I bring you a message of solidarity, a call to action, and a demand for adherence to duty of an Aryan resurgence and ultimately total Aryan victory. We have broken the chains of Jewish thought. We know not the meaning of the word mine, it is ours. Our race, the totality of our people. 10 hearts, one beat. 100 hearts, one beat. 10,000 hearts, one beat. We are born to fight and to die and to continue the flow of our people. Onward we will go, onward to the stars, high above the mud of yellow, black, and brown. So kinsmen, duty calls. The future is now. If months from now you have not yet fully committed yourself to the alliance, then you have in effect not only betrayed your race, you have betrayed yourself. So stand up like men and drive the enemy into the sea. Stand up like men and swear a sacred oath upon the green graves of our sires that you will reclaim what our forefathers discovered, explored, conquered, settled, built, and died for. Stand up like men and reclaim our soil. Kinsmen, arise. Look towards the stars and proclaim our destiny. Defeat never, victory forever.
In the early 1900s, certain companies were off-gassing highly toxic fluoride gases into the atmosphere. The surrounding communities began to get sick. Laws were enacted to compel these corporations to install scrubbers to convert these gases into fluorosilicic acid, still highly toxic, but containable. Now these companies had a stockpile of this poison, and there was no affordable way to dispose of it. Lucky for them, one of their major stockholders was also the Secretary of the Treasury, who was responsible for the Public Health Service at the time. And by 1950, the U.S. government began buying this toxic, untreated industrial waste product and dumping it into our drinking water. Reputable studies show that it's causing various cancers and other disease. With the Alexa Pure Pro, you can have clean drinking water and a remedy to this madness. Available now at InfoWarsStore.com.